Special relationships and transatlantic correspondence galore. It's time for another installment of New York Real Talk on Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting.
Eve was just the girl I knew one summer long ago. She lived out on the desert in a double white bungalow. The freight trains rumbled by underneath the endless sky. She held down a double shift by the interstate number 10. She sold palm dates to the tourists and turned tricks with gentlemen. The funds went back to Mexico, where her family struggled so. And I was just some gringo kid on a break from summer school, trying to get my shit together as a lifeguard at the pool. I met her at the Dairy Queen, and she took me to see her flowers. I'm not smart enough to paint that scene, the enchantment of those hours. It was just the girl I knew, whose story was always true. Eve was just a girl I knew who jumped a southern fence, or who swam across the Rio Grande without her documents. She dreamed of life in paradise, but found it wasn't all that nice. Had a dozen chickens then and a pair of one-eyed hounds. All of this were left behind when she went underground. She had me by for one last feast, and then from Eden she went east. And I was just some college kid who was failing every class, trying to find a way in the world whose injustices were vast. I met her at the Dairy Queen, and we shared a golden pair. I'm not smart enough to paint that scene, the way she vanished in the air. It was just the girl I knew, whose story was always true. Thank you.
New York Real Talk seems to have had an animal theme over the last couple of episodes. What with our Pink Flamingo release special, we now move to a fabulous Italian singer-songwriter who's singing about a whole variety of animals, from elephants through donkeys through a whole stack of things. We're going to hear Eve, of course. And in fact, we just heard Eve from his latest awesome album. And we say a hearty New York Real Talk. Welcome to Valerio Piccolo. How are you, Valerio?
I'm very good. Welcome from Rome.
Well, it's great that you connected with us. And I have to say, first and foremost, we are speaking just as there's a crucial European Champions League match taking place between England and Italy.
Yeah, you're right.
So, I mean, how are you sort of keeping away with it? I mean, who knows? It could be the revenge match for the European Championships that's taking place, of course. You know, after Italy has had a glorious victory.
I don't want to disappoint you, but I'm mostly a basketball fan, so I'm totally non-typical Italian in
well,
this sense.
I mean, Roberto Mancini will obviously be devastated with respect to that, and he's probably switched off now. He'll go on, you know, as we like to refer to as Manchester City supporters, Bob Mank, but never mind, probably lost in translation. Anyway, moving on from that sporting scenario, I'll keep an eye out on the scores, Valerio, so we can obviously sort of...
Okay, let me know. I'm still interested.
We're talking soccer, Pamela, just in case you're wondering. It's the sort of the proper game, not American football. There is an American football set of players in Italy, which indeed was eminently written about in John Grisham's novel, which was Playing for Pizza. And I was fascinated to find out how many American footballers actually are in Italy. It's not quite the same league as obviously the NFL, but you know it's still there. It's a sporting thing. But presumably, Valerio, as you've just said, you're more basketball, so even American football is not going to sort of float your boat.
Well, you know, I'm more oriented towards the American sport. I don't know why, because I know why. I grew up in a basketball family, so that's mainly why. So we got, you know, we got attracted to the NBA because at that time in the 70s, the NBA was like a mysterious, you know, world that we couldn't access. So, you know, that's why probably I got attracted to the American sports.
You know, it wouldn't be New York Real Talk if we didn't at least mention the Harlem Globetrotters, because clearly that's part and parcel of the whole thing. So it's great.
Of course.
Anyway, you know, I mean, obviously, Pamela, we've taken a whole shift here. It's now become sport. Okay. So anyway, NY Real Talk, the sporting aspect, which is not working. So would you like to formally introduce Valerio and indeed explain why he's one of the top three translators when it comes to Italian, English, and a whole heap of other goodies, including music that we'll be listening to during this edition of New York Real Talk?
Wow. Okay. So first of all, I have to out myself. I'm not from New York City. My mother is. She was born in Coney Island Hospital, but I actually grew up in Massachusetts, and Massachusetts people are so very, very dedicated to their sports, and you have to vote for the team, even if you don't even care about sport. So we have the Celtics, you know, and I went to see them. My dad would take me to see Celtics games. Like I said, you know, my brothers, my dad, like we all took, and my sisters, we would go to see the Bruins, and like we couldn't vote for another team. So I am like, even though I'm like removed from sport, I still have my loyalties just because of my childhood. But moving on to a much more interesting topic to me, you know, Valerio, I had the privilege of meeting when I was on the road with Jerry, with Suzanne Vega, and Valerio, I think I don't know if we met you in the States or if I met you in Italy, actually, but I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you were working with Suzanne Vega on a book that she wrote on translating or collaborating on the book.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That's how our collaboration started in the year 2000, like a long time ago now. And yeah, I translated her book of poetry and short stories that was published in Italian through a publishing company that I was working with. And so that's how we then we toured a little bit. We did a sort of a show in between reading and a concert. So I was on stage with her, translating her stories, reading her poetry while she was like playing guitar. So it was kind of at that time was not a pretty unusual format for a show, so it went really well.
Yeah, it was really, and you're such a great performer yourself, and it was like a really, it was a very magical time, and I remember that. It was fantastic. How did you get into becoming a translator? Because I did a lot of research, well, not a lot, a little bit, and I really didn't find that much on how it began, and I'm always so interested in the origin of how people find things or how things find them.
I don't know, you know, when I studied high school, I found, you know, that I was attracted to languages, and then my English was really like, I started translating songs as most of the European, you know, people do, the non-speaking, you know, the non-English speaking people do, you know, you translate Bob Dylan or Neil Young and that's how you start. And then my path took a different direction, because I went into journalism. So I was writing for an Italian newspaper for a long time, and then it was hard to find, you know, a steady job there. So I decided, I lived in Moscow for 1 year because I speak Russian. So yeah, I lived there for 1 year, for a whole year after I took my degree at college. And then I tried to work as a journalist, but it didn't work out. So I came back to my hometown, which is a small town close to Naples in the south of Italy. And then I decided to move to Rome because there was no option there for me. So I moved to Rome, and that's how I said, you know, I'll begin and do what I can do. And my best option was going back into translation. And so I worked with this publishing house, and that's how I started. And then I moved to movies, subtitles, and then to the dubbing industry that we have in Italy. So I don't know. I think it started by chance. I mean, it's never chance, but that's how it looked like, because I could do tons of different things at the time. I was even taking a degree as a sommelier at that time. So, you know, I even teach.
Right. I heard that about you. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the thing is, and I know Alex, I don't want to speak for him, but I believe that, because a lot of the people that he ends up working with and talking to and are people that are really positive. And I think the thing is that life is not the same for everyone, you know, and if you are interested in things, which it seems like your brain, your mind has been so interested in consuming and learning and applying things. And so there you found these things because you had the passion and the interest for these things. Have you done voiceover work as well? Because you sing, and because you are a musician and you love music always, and also you have this literary and translation. Has that happened as well? Have people asked you to do that as well?
No, actually, I kept things very separated, you know, like, you know, but my translation job is just, you know, a desk job, you know, behind the computer, behind the stage. And then I, you know, so singing to me, I feel like it's totally different thing. I wouldn't even try to, you know, to do the voiceover thing, especially because I have an accent, even in Italian. I have it in English, but in Italian, I have the same thing. I have an accent that comes from the south, and you know, it's not good for dubbing, for voiceover, you know. So I really should work on that to, you know, I work on that when I sing, but when you sing, it's easier, and you can have some accent that people don't mind. But if you want to do voiceover or dubbing, you know, you absolutely don't, you know, you cannot have an accent. So
yeah, for
Liria, that's why I kept things really.
I mean, the point of the matter is that we have the current prime minister or president of Ukraine, Vladimir Zelensky. He used to actually do dubbing work for Disney movies. So, you know, who knows about the accents? It's all part and parcel of the whole thing. I am intrigued, though, about we're looking at the visual side of things here. And I'm fascinated by, you've got The Road to Perdition. We've got A Scanner Darkly, Philip K. Dick's a wonderful novelization translated to the screen, and The Road to Perdition also there. And of course, we've got Quentin Tarantino's Grindhouse from that. Now, I'm is this a kind of general selection of your likes in terms of graphic narratives translated into Hollywood movies? Or were they just random posters that you just put on?
Yeah, you know, that's the room that was available behind me. So that's first of all. So I had to make the choice was hard, but you know, I think this is a kind of the first draft, you know, and then I can have like I can change them with four, because the thing is that so far I translated more than 300 movies, so you know, and it's really hard to pick up the my best one, but I have to say that these four ones are really all very important to me, because the Tarantino one is the first Tarantino movie that I translated, and I was very, you know, proud. And the other one on top is Scanner Darkly. It's one of the minor movies that I did, but I loved that movie, and I love, you know, I was totally fond of that movie. And then you have the Road, which is, you know, out of a wonderful book by Cormac McCarthy, so you know, I'm also, you know, very proud of that. And then this other one, The Prestige, with Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman, that one was really interesting, because Nolan at that time wasn't that famous as he is now, and I was really a young translator at the time. It was one of my first, I don't know, like in the first 15 movies that I did. So to me, you know, those movies are, you know, I still, after 22 years doing this, I still put a piece of my heart in each thing I do. And this is why when people ask me about this job, I keep answering, you know, it doesn't look a real job to me. Still doesn't look a job, you know, to me, which is, I think, the best answer that you can have about working, you know.
Because we launched this particular program with Eve, of course. I'm going to actually put to you yourself, would you like elephants or hourglass for your next musical selection on New York Real Talk? Elephants or hourglass? Which one are you going to go for?
I think hourglass is because it's kind of a transition song that I had in between albums, and a song that took me back to recording songs in English, and so and it's a song that you know came out by itself. It's a single. They remained a single. Didn't go into any album. And so I'm and I love the video that is attached to the song, because it's kind of it was made by a comic artist, and it's very romantic, and I love it. You know, every time I watch it, so I would go for hourglass.
The sound. Listen to the sound. The sound. Listen. It's a strange trip out of the darkness into the sun. Yellow on canvas. It's a strange trip. Road then fades into black. It's a strange trip. If I give you my hand and you touch nothing, you only feel the air. 'Cause if you just go through, then who you talking? Carnival was my promise, but then we turned the corner, and it's just an abandoned fair, while the wind roughs up your hair with a rusty roller coaster and a sad smile on a poster. Carnival was the promise, Then you lift the curtain, and it's just an empty stage with nothing there but rage and a script with no pages, like it's been there for ages. So what do you do now? You cry over a song, forget how much you're strong, believe you're being wrong. You run out of breath, can't see where I'm at, and think our life is dead. You can look ahead and take your future back. Something I just said, something you just said. You smile watching the past, you hold my hand on your chest, and nothing goes too fast. Sometimes you make it simple, flipping an hourglass, where time doesn't stop, it just begins from the top. But it's fresh and new as the night sky turns into blue. Yes, it's fresh and new. You see me and I see you. Listen to the sand, the sand.
The sands of time continue to actually pass through just as the New York Real Time episode heads into all manner of wonderful things. We mentioned we'd launched with Eve. Anything you'd like to say about that? Because, again, I did say that your latest album certainly seems to be opening up a whole range of not anthropomorphization, but the way in which sort of animals and human beings relate to each other. I mean, was there a specific thought that you had in mind? I mean, and obviously, Adam and the Animals, Eve, presumably you're looking at the first human beings who are responsible for all of us, technically?
It might be, you know, one way of looking at it. The thing is that I had in mind at that time, I had two things in mind. I had in mind that I wanted to work, because I had worked for the previous album, the album before that, I had worked with some contemporary poets, American poets. They gave me poems that I transformed into music, into songs. I put music to them and I transformed into songs. And one of those guys is Rick Moody. Rick Moody is a famous novelist, was very famous for The Ice Storm. That is one of his most famous novels that it was then made into a movie by Ang Lee like 25 years ago. And Rick is a good friend of mine. So I had in mind this idea of doing an album with him about animals. I wanted to use the animals as a metaphor for the human beings, of course. But then talking to Rick, I remember that day in a pizzeria on Bleecker Street in New York. So we were talking, very typical, scene, because an Italian in a pizzeria talking about music is really typical. And then he came up with the idea, with this kind of a legend that says that, you know, when Adam was in the Garden of Eden, he was bored before Eve was created. He was bored, and because he was there by himself, and so he complained to God. Kept complaining to God, I don't have anything to do, you know, I'm bored. And so God gave him this task to name all the animals that he had created. And that basically was when the language was born, because at that time the donkey knew that it was called donkey, the elephant knew that it was called elephant. So we combined these two things, you know, animals as a metaphor of human beings, with the how the language was born, and you know, they gave us a lot of material to work on. And Eve, I think Eve is the song that really can put together all this huge vision that we had, because we saw Eve as an alien, as an illegal immigrant, searching for a new Eden. And I think that image is so powerful in terms of metaphor. And it was even more powerful 2 years ago when the album came out, because it was before the pandemic. Then we a little bit forgot about all the immigrant problems that we have all over the world. But at that time, that was, you know, the main subject that you found in all the news and all the, you know, TV things. So at that time, to give this image as Eve, that's looking for a new Eden, and she found out that it's not better than the old one, you know, was really powerful. I had to say that I loved that song. I loved all the creative process that I went through recording that album, because it was an exchange of music and words with Rick, and it was really a very special moment that lasted a whole year. And when we got to writing Eve, we were basically the same person. Rick and I were really the same person. We went, you know, totally together with music and words. And Eve, for us, that's an email that we exchanged. And when Rick said, you know, whatever we do with this album, Eve will always be a song that we will love. And it's actually, that's how it is, because I still love that song after so many years. And I think we did something really special with that song. No, I'm not supposed to say that my stuff is special, but that song, you know, there's so many songs of my past that I listen to that, and I don't like them anymore, you know, that much. But that song is still my favorite, and it will stay my favorite for a long time, I'm sure.
We sense that, Valeria. That's why we decided to actually launch the whole interview with Eve in the first place. We could have gone with Hammerhead, we could have gone with Snakes, we could have gone with Ants, Donkey, or Lion. But we thought, no, we'd go with Eve. So it was a great stuff. And of course, as you say, Adam, Eve, and the eight chosen elements, eight chosen animals minus the biblical elephants, which opens up a whole new world. Of course, the one thing that I did notice is absent from the selection of animals, no sign of flamingos. Sorry, Pamela, but, you know, no flamingo whatsoever. You know, tough call.
Because I was waiting for Pam, that's why.
Yeah.
I left them to her.
Yeah, that's good. You know, Valerio and I have yet to collaborate, but I'm feeling an imminent collaboration. You know, it's interesting when we talk about collaboration, how, you know, if for anyone that's ever been in a band when they were young, and there are many different types of collaboration, but my particular experience is being in bands with people. There's some sort of family, there's some sort of bond that forms, whether it's just two people or whether it's, you know, a whole group of people. It's a kind of a relationship. It's a kind of an organism which starts to evolve out of that. And there's nothing like it. You can't even describe it unless you've ever been a part of it, but it's so powerful. And it is like so anyone who's like, let's say you have a partner, you know, like a love partner, but they're not in your band or they're not in the collaboration. They can't understand, they can't touch that collaborative. It's like sacred. There's like a sacred bubble that you're in. And the interesting thing is, I'm sure and I'm sure Alex would have some interesting thoughts on this, how it's almost like metaphysical, and the cells and everything, these your experiences, their experiences, you sort of meld and form this life form of the two, or of the people involved. And I think it's fascinating. So when you were talking about your collaboration with Rick and the things that were happening, what came from it, I don't think that a person ever even has a clue of what that's going to be. And they're like, hey, let's do a project together, let's do a song together. And then you do, and then, you know, this whole world happens, this world is created.
Yeah.
That is just, it's so important. It's so important. And because of that, you share with the world something absolutely unique that would never come from just you or just them.
Exactly. Yeah, it was, you know, one of the best experiences I had in my music life, I had to say, because it was you know, but like a human experience, a friendship experience, a music experience, and you know, it was really one of the best times that I had when I think of my music career.
You mentioned, Valerio, that you'd been in New York, you'd had pizza in New York. I'm not sure whether New York pizza could ever actually match genuine Italian pizza in Italy. I mean, surely there are a whole range of issues there in terms of where you're coming from, even if it's brought over by Italian immigrants and areas from that point of view. But that's a moot point for the nationalists to actually sort of argue over. But it does bring us neatly round to Pamela's wacky New York moment question. Pam?
Well, Valeria, I'm interested because I know you spent a lot of time in New York. I don't know just how much time, or if you actually like lived here for a time. I'm curious about that. But we know from spending time in New York that it is a very special place, a unique place. Energetically, who knows what the ley lines might be? It's crazy. It's really crazy. And just about everyone that I've had a discussion with New York about who has done time here, which we say, has a wacky New York moment story about something that out of all the things that happened to them, this one sticks in their memory as, okay, even for New York City, this was bizarre. I just saw this thing or experienced this thing or was part of this thing or was asked to do this thing. And it's blowing my mind because did that really just happen? So that's the question is, will you share with us something? Is there something that comes to mind with your New York experience?
Well, I had to say that. I've been going back and forth from New York in the last like 20 years. So I spent a lot of time, even if it was sometimes, you know, just a couple of weeks there, 3 weeks here, you know. But for the last 20 years, I spent, I think, an average of 2 or 3 months, you know, a year in New York. So it's really good time, good quality time too. One thing that strikes me, and it happened a couple of times, is that I meet in New York, I meet people, I mean, you know, people from Italy sometimes, you know, people from Italy that I don't know they're in New York at the same time, you know, when I'm there. And I meet there it happened twice. One time I met a very famous Italian pop singer that was starting to know New York. He was way more famous than me, like really a star in Italy. His name is Jovanotti. He's very famous in Italy. And he, 15 years ago, he decided that I wanted to move to New York for a couple of years, start to collaborate with Italian, with the American musicians. And I met him while I was walking. It was Sunday morning on 6th Avenue around Greenwich Village. It was desert, you know, nobody was there, like the Sunday morning, very early. And I was at light, waiting to cross the street, and I turned on my right and he was there, and I said, you are Jovanotti. I said you're Jovanotti. I'm very brave, even when I talk to, you know, famous people, I invited him to my show. I had a show the next day, and I said, you want to come to my show to see my show? And he even said yes, but he didn't come, of course, but you know, but still, there was a moment. But the even a craziest moment was I was at one of my favorite spots in the on McDougal Street. There's this cocktail bar called Dante, which is Cafe Dante, which is great. I mean, they're so good with cocktails. And I was there.
We'll go there when you come to New York City.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. they're really great. And I was there having cocktails with some friends of mine. And there was an ex-girlfriend of mine from my hometown in Caserta. That I was, you know, I mean, ex like 40 years ago. Okay. And she came in by herself. She entered Dante. And I said, Arianna, you're She said, "Oh, Valerio." And so we spent the night with this friend of mine all together, you know, remembering the time in Caserta. Like, but it was really crazy. I haven't seen this girl for, I don't know, 20 years or something. And I even didn't know that she came often to New York. And, you know, so those things, you know, it doesn't happen in Rome, for instance, which is, you know, it happens in my hometown, which is a small town. And it's normal that you meet, you know, people that you know every time. But, you know, when it happens in New York, it's a little crazy. So, you know, I had several moments close, you know, similar to this one. So it always strikes me, you know, but it makes me think that, you know, there's something that, you know, that I had to be there. I had to be there that moment. This looked to me all signs, you know, or the idea that I had to be there.
Did you ever think of moving here, like permanently?
I did think, you know, but I think it's also, you know, after a while, you know, when for first years you come to New York, it's, you know, it's a total dream. Oh, you know, it's everything is fantastic. And then you start understanding why some people want to, you know, move out of New York, because it's, you know, it's hard, of course, it's hard. So my ideal plan would be, you know, to do like 6 months in Rome and 6 months in New York. That, but I think it's everybody's ideal plan, you know.
But no, it's true. You know, Patti Smith said to, you know, young people, I mean, this was before the pandemic, but now the prices and everything have gone up again to before.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy. But she said, you know, young artists don't move to New York City, which is, I know where she's coming from. She's not telling creative people not to come here, but it's just, you have to hold down so many jobs to be able to afford your little closet that That's you share with five other people in order to be here. So as far as like the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, you know, years of artists living, you know, near bond out cars, and but the rents were cheap, so the arts were really great and they were flourishing because there were a lot of people that were just artists, you know. You need time for that, and it's just so expensive that unless you have a trust fund or some way of affording to be here, you can't spend that time on your art and create your art. So you'd be better in a city that, or a little village where it's not expensive, and then you come here periodically.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why, you know, because it's time consuming, and then it distracts you from what you have to do there. So and it absorbs your creativity sometimes. So, you know, it can be really hard. In Rome, it goes on, you know, the same way, but it's a little easier. You know, it's a little, like, it's a little smaller and easier. So, but it can be, you know, the same scenario, you know, that you just run, you know, all around all the time. And then, you know, you find yourself at home at night, totally consumed, and you don't have that creativity, that creative energy, you know, to work on, as you say, on yourself and on the things that you want to do.
Valerio, Italy is home to many famous composers, my own personal favourite, Vivaldi being one of them. Do you have any particular influences from either a classical or a contemporary edge in terms of how things are going? And we haven't even mentioned, of course, the opera, which is very much part and parcel, and it's built in to so much Italian life.
I had to say that even if I have a cousin that was she was a soprano, so we were, you know, often into that kind of opera world. I had to say that I listen most to the Russian composers. I listen more to Tchaikovsky and Prokofiev. Prokofiev is really one of my favorite, because when I was there in Russia to study, and I was young, I was 18, 20, 22 years old, I went often to, you know, at that time we went like every week, we went a couple of times to see ballet or you know, operas. And so I really felt that that kind of, you know, melody was more, you know, suited more to what I loved about music. So I had to say that it's weird because being in, as you say, being in Italian and you should go with Vivaldi or you know, or the others, but you know, you never know. And I really, you know, Tchaikovsky and Prokofiev to me are something that I could say that I maybe took something, you know, from
and throwing in a Polish composer, Frédéric Chopin.
Yeah. why not?
Exactly.
I don't know. I think that, you know, I think that classical music is a it's something that we all tend to go in certain time of our lives, you know, to go back and, you know, and then go out of it and maybe go deeper into the contemporary music. But then, you know, there's always some moments that you go back and you, it's like, I don't know, it's like taking your time compared to run, you know, all the time.
Fast food compared to a genuine, honest meal.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what it looks to me.
I would love to interject if the two of you don't mind. It's fascinating to me that, and I'm only just beginning my exploration of this for many reasons, but what comes into you through being Italian, having so much Italian blood and like all of the, you know, well, also like with Greek and the cradle of civilization and then, as you say, Southern Italy, it's like there's, and also growing up there, there's such a richness since the beginning of time, really, with humans that must inform the people. Like we've interviewed a few Greek artists who are so philosophical and is part of the mindset, you know, but also like, this is such a broad question and I apologize, but how do you feel that being Italian like informs how you experience life that might be different than if you were not?
You know, I don't know what to say because my as I grew up I felt like I wanted to go far from Italy, so I looked more often, you know, far from Italy, you know, so I looked to other worlds because that was my, you know, my mind was really open thanks to probably, you know, my parents that gave me chances, you know, to travel and you know, to make this, the experiences that you had to do when you were a kid. And so I feel like I'm almost discovering back Italy now. You know, more now than so I don't know if I took so much from Italy. Of course, but you know, there's so much Italy in me. But I feel when it comes to music, for instance, you know, I feel that I took way more from, I don't know, the West Coast of the 70s, you know, from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, or you know, from James Taylor or Carole King or Joni Mitchell, then from, you know, the Italian background in music and in arts. I don't know, but maybe it's not like that. Maybe it's my feeling and it's not like that because maybe, you know, in my blood, there's so much of it, you know, that I can even know this. But I feel like I'm sort of doing like a kind of a backward, you know, a path, you know, like the other way around. You know, I'm discovering Italy now more than I did when I was young.
And your favorite Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young number?
Oh well, there's so many of them, but since I love Crosby more than the other three, because I think he's something more. So I don't know. I would go for one of his songs, like maybe Almost Cut My Hair. Maybe, you know, that could be one of those, but. Yeah, but that's how I grew up, through thanks to my brother. You know, I have a brother who's 4 years older than me, and as all the elder brothers, you know, he teaches you the music that then you go on and listen to it. So I had to say thanks to him because of that.
Well, it's brought us neatly, Valerio, to the wrap-up of New York Real Talk. A reminder, of course, valeriopiccolo.com is the best place, presumably, to actually access your web material and so on from there. The usual socials will doubtless apply. Pamela, last two questions for Valerio, please.
I'm really sad because I can't believe we've already gotten to the last two questions.
I talk too much. That's why time flies.
No, it's perfect. And I'm so glad that the two of you, that Alex and Valerio, are now knowing each other. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, there's a host of things that may happen as a result. So the two questions are, have you had a good time with us today?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I would do, let's do it on a daily basis because, you know, that's what I love the most. What I love the most. You know, I have this kind of conversations. To me, it's always inspiring, and, you know, and it means, you know, having a good mood for a week, you know, after something like this. So,
yeah, it's true. So the second question is sort of answered, which is, will you please come back soon?
Oh, yes, I will.
No, I have to tell you that Alex just changed my life. And basically, like, meeting him and having these wacky interviews with people and meeting all these people, I didn't know who they were and they didn't know who I was. And they listened to my music and talked about my lyrics. And then we talked about so many things. First time I was so excited, I almost threw up. I went out in my garden and I had to call, I called Donna Lewis. I called like my best friend, but she didn't answer. And I'm going, I need to talk to someone. I have to ground myself.
Or as so we like to say, pavement pizza. It's a different line entirely, but still, so it goes. Valeria, it's been awesome connecting with the good self. Just out of interest, the score with England, Italy, it's still 0-0. So I'm just saying, you know,
okay.
Appraised of
that. That's good. Seems fair.
Exactly. Pamela, New York, of course, is home to?
Home of the world's finest pickle.
I will now proceed to entangle the entire area.
Almost cut my hair. It happened just the other day. Getting kind of long. I could have said it was in my way, but I didn't, and I wonder why. I feel like letting my freak flag fly. Yes, I feel like I owe it. Because I had the flu for Christmas, and I'm not feeling up to par. It increases my paranoia, like looking at my mirror and seeing a police car. But I'm not giving in an inch. get myself together. I'm going to get down in that sunny southern weather. And I find a place to silence. Separate the wheat from the chaff. I feel